everybody, and welcome to the Tea with Crema. My name is Chris. I'll be your host today, and I'm joined by my best friend, Emma.
Hello, everyone.
Our episode today is another book review. It is also another non-fiction book review. I'm realizing as I'm saying it, our next one should probably be a fiction book.
I like that.
Fantasy, maybe some sci-fi, just not real life, probably not historical fiction unless it's really good, but we'll see. Anyways, it's another non-fiction book, and before we reveal it, we're going to go ahead and get to our tea check. So, Emma, what tea did you bring today?
I'm a failure, everyone. I know, I made it through 80 episodes, guys. Actually, probably 60 of those episodes I made it to with having a tea-related drink. I'm currently at my sister's house in California. We had a family emergency, so I'm back home. And I don't know how to work anything in the house, so we have water today. That was a really long-winded story and excuse, but today I have water.
Some good old-fashioned water.
What are you drinking today, Chris? Hopefully it's not an omen for the rest of the episode.
Today I have an organic Shihuan oolong tea, and this is... you know, translated to water sprite oolong tea, as in like a fairy, a spirit, sprite.
Sprightly.
Like Tinkerbell almost. But
yes, love that.
And it's a rock tea that originates from the Fujian province in China. And it's grown in mineral-rich cliffs in the mountains. And it's heavily roasted and oxidized. And so it's supposed to have a rich and toasty flavor. And all that is code for... like, fancy people understand these flavor profiles, and I was like, cool, this is good tea. I would say there was nothing, no fancy flavors, nothing over the top, nothing flashy. It was just a quality oolong tea.
Love that.
Which I didn't know was its own tea until I started the podcast.
Oh, so there's that. 80 episodes, and we've learned so much about tea. Some would say a little too much about tea. We should have a whole episode just dedicated to tea at this point, because you know
at
what?
At this point.
We've actually never talked about tea other than our tea check-ins.
So that could work, you know, look forward to it in the future. But today's episode is, I read a book, and I don't remember where the book came from. I really couldn't tell you who recommended this book to me, but if you are the person, just know that I appreciate your recommendation because I read the book. So today's book is called Attached, and it is The New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love. If you are the person that recommended that book, that's what we're reviewing today. Our experience reading the book and kind of the history behind it as it relates to the Tea with Crema, like the whole history because it's too much, but overall, that book. And so, generally speaking, again, don't know where the recommendation came from, but doing some research into the book, I realized the concept of attachments I know came up when I was reading a CNN article after seeing it in one of their morning news article emails that I get, and it was talking about attachment styles, and that particular article was talking about conflict resolution as it relates to attachment styles. And I think that was certainly a part of the beginning of the journey for me in learning about attachment styles, because I wasn't familiar with attachment styles.
It's all coming back to me now, Christopher. No, you are exactly right. That is what happened, because you then sent me the article. And then we were talking about, like,
reference the book?
No.
Where'd the book come from then?
I don't think the article referenced any books, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I think it was like, the article was referencing like attachment styles and conflict resolution. And then we had talked about like, oh, you know, like attachment styles can differ depending on the relationships that you're in. So like with your friends, your coworkers, and that's what the article was talking about. So then we were like, oh, we should find a book that talks about attachment styles. And then I think that's when you had maybe mentioned it to your sister and then she had the book.
I just remember seeing it at Target. So that's also a possibility.
Yes. It was kind of like, you know, like when you hear about something and then you start seeing it more often, whatever that concept is, I think that's exactly what happened. So, I mean, if someone did recommend this book to us, please let us know. And also give yourself a pat on the back because it was actually very enlightening. I enjoyed it. Do you want to give a quick rundown of the three types of attachment styles that we read?
So for anyone who hasn't or won't read the book, there are 3.5 attachment styles mentioned in the book. There's the secure attachment style. There is the anxious attachment style, the avoidant attachment style, and the anxious avoidant attachment style. The book states that the majority of people, the majority of adults, are of the secure attachment style, which is pretty self-explanatory in the type of attachment, the name of it, and kind of what that looks like in real life. These are individuals who readily engage in relationships and bonding and are secure and trusting and do the things pretty straightforwardly, securely.
That part.
It's literally in the name. So there's that. Anxious, also very straightforward in that they are anxious about attachment. They're needing a lot of reaffirmment from their partners and from the individuals that they're involved with. And I say it like that because it's not just about romance. However, this book was about love specifically. And so attachment theory has applications in child rearing and work related. So it's in a lot of facets of life. This book was about love. And that was kind of what, again, I started reading about conflict resolution. And then there is the avoidant type, which are individuals who repel relationships. They do not like to necessarily be in them actively. So their actions kind of, they'll do a thing and then avoid it. Literally, that's avoidant. And then a very small percentage are a mixture of anxious and avoidant, because how? That's a question that I had immediately. I was like, how do you take the opposite sides of the magnet and then you mush them together and then you get a person? But somehow it happens.
That sounds really exhausting.
And of course, it looks like Emma has found the statistics. So about 50% of people are secure attachment, of the secure attachment style. 25% are of the avoidant attachment style. 20% are anxious, and 5% are that mixture. And so one of the first things that it tells you after it has a brief overview, if you were like me, you read it and you knew, you know yourself pretty well and were confident in your response, but then you take the quiz to, in case you're not sure, or maybe you're thinking it could be one or the other, maybe it's a mix, and then you take the quiz and it kind of reaffirms. And so for me, I went into the book thinking that I was somewhere between anxious and secure, and I then took the quiz and got the results that reaffirmed that I am
more
anxious leaning. So I did end up getting secure.
Right.
With like some pretty significant anxious leaning tendencies, which checks out. And so that's, before going into it, I was like, I'm on the cusp somewhere in that area. It's not necessarily a this or that kind of thing. And so I ended up being secure with strong anxious tendencies.
I was also the same too. I kind of went into it, but I assumed that I was more anxious. Like, I think that's just kind of how I've always been, even as a kid. Like, I was definitely that kid that cried on the first day of school, like, couldn't be very far from my mom, was very needy. And then I think, like, even going into, like, friendships and relationships, I can find myself being someone that's a little bit more, I guess, anxious about friendships and things like that. I don't know where that comes from, because I would say that I've never had, like, a bad friendship experience. But I'm also very aware of the fact that I know I can be a lot. I assumed that I was more anxious. And then as I was taking, but when I took the test that's actually in the book, like it gives you, you know, the checklist and then you check it off and everything. When I actually took that one, then it was like mostly secure. But I think because, like, again, this is based in love, right? So like I'm using my experience with Isaac as my partner. And there's a very interesting like anecdote in there where they're talking about the woman who was secure, right? And she was like going through that psychoanalysis course or whatnot, and she had to be in therapy for whatever many years. And then she had that really bad toxic partner that like brought out those attachment styles in her. So I think in the same way that like you need a secure partner, I would say that Isaac has like definitely given me that comfort and met my needs, that I'm more secure in a relationship than anxious. But I would say like as a teenager, I was definitely more anxious, and yeah. So,
and one could say it's because of this relationship specifically. Like, who's to say if you were in a different relationship?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, who's to say like how I would be in any other relationship? So I think it's very interesting. Like, I think about kind of like the friendships that I have and like the relationships that I build with my colleagues and everything. So I don't know. I think it's very interesting. And I was low-key psychoanalyzing everyone in my life.
That's so interesting because I didn't really read it and consider, but I would say, yeah, I definitely don't have the same attachment styles in all aspects of my life. Professionally, avoid it.
For sure.
Socially, yeah,
me as well.
Avoid it. Like, socially, yeah. Very avoidant. Right. And it's so interesting because I feel like I'm a naturally anxious person. So I don't know how I'm so avoidant in a lot of relationships. I don't know.
I wonder if avoidance is just like another type of anxiety. I think anxious is kind of what we consider the textbook definition of anxiety, but is avoidance and like the need for independence and the need for like autonomy. Like that to me is almost like, I don't know what the, like, I feel like that's also an anxiety in itself.
It merits additional reading.
For sure.
In those areas specifically. Mm-hmm. But I am very confident in the results that I got as it relates to relationships.
Right. I did like that little, do you remember that one tidbit that was talking about the, like, why are there so many avoidants in the dating pool? And it was talking about like, oh, you know, like, because avoidant people tend to blah, 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 blah. So there's going to be more, or they tend to want, you know, more freedom. So they're going to be in, you know, less relationships. So they're going to be out in the pool more. And then how secure people tend to have less relationships. So they're not going to be in the dating pool as often. So I'm like, I can't imagine being in the dating pool as an anxious person, knowing that the dating pool is mostly full of avoidant people. And I think that's just like a generalization either as well. Like, I don't think that's necessarily true. Like, there could just be secure people out there who are just not in the same dating pool, or like not in the same, like.
But I think that's what the book said, though.
Right.
Also, one would have to be anxious and aware of their attachment style to know that that's kind of why that is happening. It makes complete and total sense. Like, it makes sense that the dating pool would be more avoidant, and thus they make it seem like more people are avoidant, because yeah, avoidants are people who are not typically going to be staying in relationships for very long. So it makes sense that they would be the ones in the dating pool the most often. Yeah, that very much checks out. And honestly, again, maybe it's because it's not my natural inclination. I was like, it just seems like it's exhausting trying to date someone who's avoidant, because
literally,
why are we doing this?
Why are you like this? Like, if you don't want to be in a relationship, that's okay. That's all you have to say.
Like, that's the thing, because I am not, again, very secure. Like, I'm secure in that I'm not chasing after you. So
right.
If you want to go, there's the door.
But you know what's interesting, though, is because I think it's something maybe worth thinking about, or like worth noting, that you have all of these like rom-coms in Hollywood and things, and it's always the man, right, who's kind of like this symbol for avoidant behavior, right? Like, doesn't want to be locked down, and then he meets this girl and she changes his life by either being, you know, the complete opposite of what he thought. So it's like there's this like messaging also out there that these men, or these avoidant men, are just looking for that perfect secure woman, which is exactly kind of like what the book was saying too. Like, you just need a secure partner that's going to either like meet your needs, right, in whatever way that means. But I don't know, Hollywood, you're out here just perpetuating these avoidant men and letting them know it's okay.
Must be exhausting. I like that part because it's wild, because I feel like just describing the different attachment styles, we've pretty much described the majority of the book. I don't think anxious avoidance really even got a chapter.
Right.
I think it was 5%. Kind of like, figure this out yourself kind of thing. So
we're going to have to write a whole separate book of just that.
Just you. But I think my most beneficial chapter was the part 4, which was sharpening your relationship skills. Because, I don't know, I feel like that's the one where you like left the most amount of tangible skills. Part 2 was helpful in that it gives you the background of the 3 attachment styles.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, part 1 gives you the quizzes. And then part 3, talking about their conflicts, made it felt like, you know, we're just out here stirring the pot.
Right.
We're spilling the tea. We're telling everybody's business.
Right.
I could have read the book without part 3 and not felt like it like took away from the underlying message. But part 4 is definitely where I felt like the nuggets were.
Yeah.
Because that's where you're figuring out like how to, A, deal with conflict effectively. And then, of course, that effective communication is just like a principle of a lot of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, I don't know if it's been in movies or music or just in general, it sounds like a lot of messaging is now reiterating that communication with your partner goes a very long way. in working through a lot of things with them.
Right.
Saying that, but then giving someone the skills to actually navigate that, I think that was where the value from the book really came out.
Yeah, because I think it's like, even, you know, if we were to relate this back to the Boundaries book too, right? Like, the Boundaries book was very, like, tangible in that same way of, like, if you're seeing this in your life, like, you can use this as, like, a way to kind of guide that conversation. In the same way that this one is, like, if you are someone who's anxious or who is more anxious attachment style, this is what's going to help you. And, like, if you're someone who's avoidant, this is what's going to help you. And then even in that chapter, they have the little work, the worksheet type thing, which I felt like that was also like helpful in terms of like, how do you talk to your partner? Right. So it's like all coming back to the effective relationship, or not effective relationship, but effective communication. Right. So even though it's like, it's such a short chapter though, that little, like that first part of part four was like really short. So, but I felt very like impactful in the way that like, it was very like, to the point, you know. It was like, you write about all of these things, now like the next part is always like, okay, now what, right? Like, I feel like as readers, we're always thinking, okay, great, I'm very self-aware now what do I do about this self-awareness?
Mm-hmm. It was a good introduction to the topic.
Mm-hmm.
It did not overwhelm you in any of the categories.
No.
And I would almost describe it as, you know, like when we were doing those meta studies in school, and it was basically just someone who'd read a bunch of the studies and then kind of summarized all of them. That's right. That's exactly what this was. Because when I tell you, like, the bibliography in the back is thick.
I mean, from the ebook, it's 27 pages worth of sources.
In the real book, we're talking like 4 or 5 pages of just sources, just source after source after source for where they were getting this information. And so, like, think about it like a Wikipedia article where, yes, there's the article, which is a great overview, but then if you're wanting to continue to learn more, that bibliography in the back is a clutch resource. And so if I wanted to continue reading attachment styles, like, that would definitely be, adult me is like, great, let's go to the bibliography, as opposed to like, let's Google search it, because now I have, you know, I've kind of found a reputable, trustworthy source who's kind of done some of the heavy lifting for me. And so if I wanted to learn more about secure anxiety or avoid it, or if I wanted to learn more about those communication styles, that bibliography, I guarantee you, got some golden nuggets down there to really dive into those other things. And I'm sure there's even some resources about that I'll probably try to look for in terms of attachment styles at work, or attachment styles in not relationships, like family or social. Because again, those are definitely relationships where I feel like if I were to take those quizzes, I would not get the same results as,
oh, for sure,
romantic relationships. As I said,
right,
at work, avoidant. avoidant. I'm like, yes, I want to be close to my coworkers. Who wants to go to happy hour? Not me. Bye.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. And I feel terrible saying that too, because I am someone, I feel like I am a little anxious avoidant in that way when it comes to work relationships, because I need to make connections. And sometimes work is the only connection that I can make, especially living in Japan. And at the same time, I'm like, when I get to the place, I'm like, this is not the vibe. This is not what I was looking for. Like,
looked but did not find.
Literally.
Gotta try again now.
Yeah, I would like to read more about like the non-love relationships, because I feel like, especially maybe just like, you know, with Isaac and I and being in a married relationship, like obviously we have conflict and whatnot, but it's also helpful to see like what both of our attachment styles are too. And I wouldn't even say that Isaac is more secure leaning. I would say he's actually more like anxious leaning as well. So I think it's just over time, we've come to realize like how to meet each other's needs and anxiety.
They didn't really talk about like when you have outside of secure,
anxious,
secure,
anxious.
They didn't really talk about like avoidant. Well, they did say avoidance don't really mess with each other.
Right. Because how are y'all going to avoid each other?
Talking about, oh, let me show you the door. Plot twist, I'm already out of it. don't get up. I've already left. Don't worry about leaving. I'm leaving.
But yeah, I was like looking, I was hoping for that anxious to anxious, because yeah, it said, you know, secure to anxious or secure to avoidant, and avoidant, obviously they're not going to mesh, but where's that anxious?
Now that I'm thinking about it, they did not talk about anxious.
Right.
All they said was secure and secure, match made in heaven. Avoid and avoid it, it doesn't happen. No one talked about anxious, anxious. What do you do then? Is it just, do you anxious yourselves into security? Like, how does this work?
I think that's what happened, actually. Like, I think we're just both so anxious together that one of us is secure enough to figure out when the other one's feeling it, and the other one is secure enough to figure out the other one needs a little more love.
So both, it's a mutual experience. And now, boom, you've anxietied yourself into security.
Please look forward to our Isaac and I's book, When Anxious Loves Anxious, attached. Part 2. So do you feel like that was your main takeaway?
I would say so. That it was a good foundation. Mm-hmm. The skills, the basic communication skills were included. And if I needed to, there's definitely some additional research to be done.
Right, for sure. I think this is like a good starting point, similar to like our boundaries book review again. Like that was like a good jumping off point. And like, if you need to know more, or like are more interested, then this was a great like Spark Notes version of all of the research that they did. And that's kind of what they said. They like went through, you know, hundreds of thousands of research to figure out how to talk about attachment styles. So I think the only thing that I would have loved was a longer section on, you know, the tangible things. Like, I wanted more.
A little less drama from part 3, a little more tools from part 4.
Right, right, right. So, you know, overall, though, I thought it was a very solid, like, start. So what's your final rating?
I gave it a 4 out of 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, it was a really good start. And I really think that, again, the things that I needed the more of were the actual tangibles and the takeaways.
Right. Okay. I think we're on the same page. Like, I also, 4 out of 5, very straightforward, super easy to read actually as well. Like, I thought it was very like well written, and it was very simple, like wasn't too jargony, which sometimes I feel like nonfiction books can get really like kind of like caught up in the sauce. And I felt like this one was very much just like a good balance, you know, gave the anecdotes where it needed, kind of reflected on the childhood studies as well. Like those case studies I felt like was really helpful too. Like most of this book is written in anecdote form, and I thought it was really helpful too. Like I felt like a teacher had written it almost as well, because there was those checkpoints where they would write the anecdote and be like, what do you think this style is? And I was like, oh, it's this. And I was like, never mind, I actually don't know what this is. Like, you know, they would give the answer and whatnot. So I thought that was helpful. So yeah, I agree. 4 out of 5.
That's really it. There's not really anything else to say. We put that nice little neat bow. So definitely would recommend, if you are interested mm-hmm. in the concept of attachment styles, if you want to learn more about your attachment style and conflict resolution, things of that nature, just like a jumping off point, a really solid, easy read, a good way to jump into it. And then, you know, if we follow up with any additional resources that we have found since then, hopefully we can find that CNN article to kind of what started the Tea with Crema on this attachment style journey. Mm-hmm. We'll try to link that as well. But for the most part, really solid read. So, Emma, it's now time for our
rapid fire questions!
All right, now, what question you got today?
Today, my question is, what is the weirdest food combination that you enjoy? I'll go first while you're thinking.
Okay.
I really, truly, like, love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with barbecue Lays. It has to be barbecue. Like, I mean, chips in general I'm okay with a PB&J, but like the most ultimate supreme like combination is the PB&J and the barbecue.
That works a little bit though. That's not like, it's not the wildest combination I've ever heard in my life.
It's not.
Now, if you put the chip in the sandwich, then maybe we'd have some what?
Yes.
Okay. You know, on the side, it's one thing.
As a kid, I would put it inside. Now I'm not, because it's like kind of messy. So as an adult, I'm not that worsened. But as a kid, I would.
The chip would get soggy.
Not, but I mean, if you're eating it right then and there, it's not going to get soggy.
Okay. Well, I trust you on that one.
Thank you.
I'm not going to be putting chips in my sandwich. But the concept of a chip and sandwich pairing, not that wild.
Yeah, true. It's not. Yeah.
I think.
But I mean, in terms of like, I don't know, because Isaac's always giving me such a hard time about it that I thought it was weird. So maybe it's not weird. I know like the chip and sandwich, like that's a normal combination, but I think it's just like the flavoring of the chip. And that's the only time I eat barbecue chips is with my PB&J sandwich.
I'm about to one up your weirdness. It took me a little bit to think about it, but then I was like, nah, I have this weird combo.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's tortilla.
Okay.
Hot dog.
Okay.
And refried beans.
What in the Tex-Mex kitchen creation?
And then obviously you put a little cheese on it too, but...
You don't even eat meat.
I think that's why I tried it, because, you know, traditionally, chili dog.
Right.
But I don't like bread all that much.
I was like, it's a lot of bread when you do a chili dog.
I don't like a hot dog or hamburger buns because it's too much bread.
Right.
I really only like sandwich bread if I'm going to eat bread. And so I was like, cool, what if we just like mix the bread? We use a tortilla.
Is this like a flour tortilla or corn tortilla?
A flour tortilla. I don't really like corn tortillas.
Do you like heat it up?
You cook the hot dog.
I know, but like, do you heat up the tortilla?
Usually, because I store them in the refrigerator.
So it's a little toasty.
It's a little toasty.
Where did the refried beans come from?
It's because I didn't...
This is nothing like a chili dog. Like, I don't even understand.
In the early days of like being a vegetarian, I just like couldn't be bothered to figure out how to make vegetarian chili. And they didn't really have any substitutes available. And so I was literally just like in the kitchen and was like, what options do we have here? What's the consistency here? And then, you know, my brain was like, sometimes chili has beans and I like refried beans on tacos, and we could put this hot dog almost like a taco. And so it just like all of the ingredients came together, and like definitely season your refried beans. Please don't just
Don't put your just from straight from the can.
That's not okay anytime.
That's a crime.
you season the refried beans and you put them on the hot dog, and then boom, you have a taco dog. Maybe, I don't know.
I don't even know if it's that.
A burrito dog.
It's something. That's what it is. Actually, you know what? As you were saying it, and I was like thinking of all the textures, I actually have another one that's probably going to get the ick from a lot of people, and they're going to be like, what is she talking about? My grandpa used to love making this soup, and I like loved eating it too. It was cream of mushroom soup, like condensed cream of mushroom soup, right? So you would throw it in the pot, and this would just go in like a regular mini little soup pot, and then corn on top of that. So you'd take the corn with the juice in it, and it would, you know, thin out the cream of mushroom. And then he'd put in canned tuna in it. And then it was even worse because he would call it cat soup because it literally looked like cat food, but it was so delicious. And sometimes, like, whenever I'm, like, really just needing something nostalgic and warm, I will make it for myself.
How do you even make it? Like,
you just mix it all together, and you literally just stir it until it heats up. So I remember being, like, 6, 7 years old. Like, my grandpa would be like, cat soup? And I was like, cat soup it is! It was also because it was one of the only meals I could make using the stove by myself as a kid. Because they're like, you can't burn down the house this way. Plot twist.
Cream of mushroom.
Cream of mushroom. The condensed Campbell's cream of mushroom.
And tuna.
And corn. Don't forget the corn. Because the corn thins it all out.
So you don't drain the corn?
Nope. You could use the corn juice.
This is wild. So that definitely wins. I'm grabbing at the brain. Okay. So those are our two combos right there.
When I first heard it, I was like, oh yeah, duh. My peanut butter and jelly and my... But then as you were mentioning your refried beans, I was like, oh my god, cat soup.
Bonus points if either of us can produce pictures of these foods.
It's so ugly. I cannot.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Did anyone else eat this food? Or was it just the two of you?
My sister refused because she was like, that looks disgusting. And my mom was like, what is grandpa feeding you now? It was either Vienna sausages or cat soup. So,
oh dear. Well, it happened. So, okay.
What's your rapid fire question today?
Oh goodness. My question is: if a waiter spilled a drink on you, but it was a total accident, would you still tip?
Of course. It was a total accident, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I would still tip. What kind of question is that?
First of all, it wouldn't be a question if people would not do it.
Right. Like. I just, like, I'm a firm believer in the tip. I'm not a firm believer in tipping, like, the system of tipping. Like, I think we should just pay people a livable wage. But as someone who was in the food industry for a very hot second and then quit immediately after, like, mistakes happen, right? If it was on purpose, right, like, somebody was acting some type of way and they spilled a drink on me, I would still tip, though. That's the thing. Like, even if they did it on purpose. And story, end of story is that I'm always tipping, regardless.
Literally. You deserve to not get paid for doing
literally anything,
so that's wild.
Yeah. Okay. What's your answer?
Well, yeah. I thought it was pretty self-explanatory. It'd be very rude otherwise. Like, I just...
Right.
Now, would I be very upset? Like, yes, especially if I was about to go to, like, a...
Someplace.
Place.
Right.
And then you spilled not water on me?
Yeah. Can I just tell... Can I just... My most memorable spilling story as a, oh, as a waitress. I worked at my uncle's sushi restaurant. Just, that's my context for this story. And it was my cousin and I. She would... We would take turns. So one of us would work the floor. The other person would work the sushi bar. And this one time, it was probably like my first or second day on the job, and I was serving the miso soup. And as I was serving the miso soup, one of the patrons had backed up into me as I was placing down the miso soup, and I had a tray that had three other miso soups on it. So like he backed into me on accident, and the three miso soups fell on this woman. She was really nice about it. At the same table.
So he like low-key did it on purpose because he wanted you to spill it on the lady.
Low-key, it felt a little purposeful, but anyway, I still got tipped at the end of that interaction.
And do, because why would you not? It's so rude.
Yeah.
Well, Emma, where can people find the podcast?
You can find our podcast on Instagram or Facebook at The Tea with Crema. If you'd like to buy us some ingredients to make cat soup or hot dog taco, please Venmo us at The Tea with Crema. You can also catch up on all of our episodes on all of your favorite streaming platforms. We'll see you next time. Bye! Excuse me. Go outside.
Oh, my
phone. Wait, no, that's my... I need that. Give that back. Hey, come back. Give that back. I need... I just took my AirPods. Keeps. Bye. Close the door. Those two. That's a case study right there. One of them's definitely anxious and the other one's definitely avoidant. If my sister's listening to this, I'll let you figure out which child I'm talking about.
She knows.